Hello, everyone. This is Glenda, and welcome today to the Blessings of Christ. We have a really, really sunny day here. Another one. we pray for the sun. When we've had too much sun, we tend to pray for a little bit of a cool off. So that's just the way we are as humans delighting in the creations of nature and God. We do like variety. We like to have pleasant experiences. And I just like to remind you that there's always a pleasant experience waiting for you in your heart, no matter what you're going through. And the harder it is to get to those pleasant experiences, let's just say something's not so good going on in your life, and you really have to look for those bright lights within. That's when those bright lights really change your life. They change your outlook to where you're not driving deeper into the negativity or the challenge or whatever it is that has darkened your spirits a little bit. So always look for the light, especially within yourself. If it's not available currently in the environment, look for those lights within yourself, and it will make a difference. And one of the ways it makes such a difference is that you really don't realize it, but you're a lot like a lightning bug. You are actually absorbing absorbing UV light into your fluorescent storehouse. You know, every time you are doing something good, experiencing something good, contributing to something good in the world, it's being recorded inside you, and it's being held as a special energy form that can fluoresce, just like a lightning bug can fluoresce in night. And it may just be a little spark of light, but that's sometimes all it takes. When I was a little girl, I would look for lightning bugs, and then I would follow them wherever they went in my parents' backyard. And my mom would say, would come out with a ball jar, you know, and say, why don't you catch some? And then you can bring them in your bedroom. I say, no, they're supposed to light up the world. Well, see, I think that's actually what Yeshua was telling the apostles. There's a little light in you. And you may think it's unimportant, but it's not. And you can take that little light in you. If you take I think he used the word basket off of that light, set it on a hill, it can light up the world. And that's true for each one of us. And sometimes we wonder, you hear from me, you hear from Yeshua, you hear from other inspired teachers that you are receiving blessings and they're out there. And you're wondering, well, where are they? And how do I get them? Well, the way you get them is you dare to open that little light inside yourself and know that light attracts light. It doesn't matter how tiny it is. Your little touch of light can attract countless blessings that have been stored for you, or at least are available for you to reaching for and putting in your basket. So dare to be positive. Dare to look for the light and find yourself in that light. Okay, while we're waiting for more people to arrive, I just want to say hello, Nancy. It's good to have you here today.
I'm so glad to be here. Hi, everyone. Hope you're doing great today. I'm just so happy to be again.
Yeah, we're going to have a great time today. We've got a wonderful lesson to study, and good sharing.
Yeah, and it always seems to go back to the heart.
always goes
to the heart.
Yeah, and very, very much today. I was just getting ready to pull that chapter up online. Oh, my goodness. Oh, wow. I just contacted a picture. I got to do a screenshot of this. It came up. You know, sometimes they put the most amazing screenshots for our delight. And, you know, you might think that doesn't, well, that's just something that came through the internet. But it was so much more than that because it triggered something in me. And I'm going to save it, maybe can send it and trigger something in you in some future communication. You know, that's how things work. Anyway, Nancy, I was going to ask you, how's the tribe today? How's the family?
Everybody's good. Knock on wood. You know, school starts next week down here in South Texas, so lots of kids, lots more traffic going out there for shopping and whatnot, but a lot of energy swirling at my work in particular. But yeah, things are thick but smooth at the same time, paradoxically. So it's good. I've got a little granddaughter, 4, Isla's actually starting pre-K. So that's a new thing. And so for all those people out there who have kids and grandkids and friends and relatives with kids starting school, we'll offer a blessing today for all of those families and kids affected by going to that system, if you will. They bring their light, though, and like you said, they do. And I think that's so important that they remember that, and that, you know, it changes. It can change things. Things change, you know, all the time. Everything's changing, so not stuck.
Yes, it does. Okay, my dear. Well, it is so good to have you here, and so good to have someone whose talents actually have a lot to do with holding together a group of people coming in good spirit for whatever purpose they are, which could and should include schooling. I know that in recent times it hasn't always been that positive, but with people like you, it will become more positive. So you keep up the good work.
Well, thank you. And I will say, just, you know, like last week I brought up about doing sort of a contrast and a coordinating with Love Without End and Keys of Yeshua. I did read Proactive versus Reactive Living today, and I'd recommend that as, you know, a partnership study with doing the right thing, because it's really, really helpful. So it's another idea just to reinforce the teaching and the application of it. So.
You bet it is. It's very much so. And we'll get there eventually to really dive into a study of that chapter. Today we're going to take it just a little bit further into Pathways to Success. We're on the second principle of success today. And the quote is not that long, because I don't want the quote to be too long. So much of it is just right here in this one paragraph. But I do want to say that if, you know, when we get, after we've read the quote, and I share some of my thoughts about it to expand opportunities for understanding, it's fine if you want to come online and discuss. I know that we haven't had any brave souls come into our discussion area, but I'm always looking at the queue. And I know that we've already had a few people come into the queue who are here really, I think, probably to ask for a blessing, which is a wonderful thing to do. There are several ways to ask for a blessing, you know. And I just want to go over this really quickly. One is to write me an email, and you can do this any time in the week, because I'm always looking for emails coming in with blessing in the address or the subject line. And I will include you in all of my prayers and blessings in that week. So write me, ask a blessing at christblessing.org. Okay, that's the email address. Should be easy to remember. Ask a blessing at christblessing.org. I believe, and I haven't checked it out, but I believe on our Christ Blessing website, Tim, our webmaster, set up an email connection link on that. Check it out. I've been undergoing a lot of personal, shall we say, recovery work in the last month. And so I apologize if I haven't been more productive than in days past. That's getting really close to changing, and we're going to be having our own back to school here on Spiritus with a seminar. And also, I just got to tell you, I can't take the time for the full message, but if some of you have heard about turmeric, it comes from curcumin. It's the key healing ingredient in curcumin. And it's been discussed in many venues over the last few years because of its amazing healing ability. And recently, there has been some really educated and serious discussion, including the translation of biblical text to get to the root meaning of certain phrases, meanings, and words. And now a lot of people are really considering that when the wise men came to give their gifts to the newborn Christ child, they brought myrrh, sandalwood, myrrh and frankincense, and gold. Well, many people have wondered, why would they be bringing gold to a newborn child who would have no need for currency, especially considering that gold was not currency in those days. It was just something that I suppose the parents would keep as a dowry for the child, and that was considered to be more than reasonable by conventional ways of thinking. But now that we know about curcumin and that it comes from the Middle East, it was a spice, a life-giving, healing spice used for millennia in the Middle, in South Asia, okay, which would include India, Pakistan, that whole region from where the wise men originated. Well, I was just going through my the offerings of our distiller, who's one of the most exclusive, highly rated distillers in the world. In fact, you have to practically have a college degree in aromatherapy to even talk to them. They are not available online. They are not available to the average blender of essential oils, not to mention no commercial enterprise could afford them. Okay, but I was introduced to them and have gained access because they were one of the ones that gave me some of my last refinements on creating Christ scent. I needed ultra precious oils. And for those of you who have enjoyed Christ scent, you know there's something special about these oils. It's not just the blend, which evokes his presence, but the oils themselves are rare and unusual. Well, I was just scanning through their website to see if there was anything new, and all of a sudden I saw curcumin. They have an essential oil of curcumin. And I thought, oh, my goodness, I've got to get this. I have got, couldn't afford a large quantity of it, but I got some. I got enough to try. My friends, you will not believe it. In the jar, it looks like pure gold. And when you pour it out into another container, it is the brightest yellow you have ever seen. It glows like neon yellow. And I was thinking, oh my goodness, what if this was blended with myrrh and frankincense and curcumin? What is it possible that we might have for a healing blend? And then it all seemed to fall into place for me, because those oils could have actually been for Mary. She was still healing from childbirth. And they didn't have the elaborate medical services we have. And she had been, you know, she was virtually displaced trying to get to a point where she could give birth to the child, and had to travel from there. What if these came for her? And what if these have the most healing potential we have been looking for? Well, I'm going to be blending them. And the other thing I was a little concerned about is, what's it going to smell like? Is it going to be smelling like a Pakistani kitchen, which isn't bad? I mean, if I'm getting ready for a nice lamb dinner, that's a great aroma. But I thought, do we really want to be wearing that? It doesn't smell like that at all. It is an amazing fragrance that is, I wouldn't say beautiful by Western world standards of beauty, which are more like floral. Like if you put jasmine, rose, and sandalwood together, that would be pretty much a standard of beauty for us in the West. Well, it's not like that. It's potent, very, very potent, but not at all repelling. And as I wore it just a little bit longer, it smells like the most gorgeous niche type of perfume that people are paying $1,000 an ounce for right now. I mean, it was very rare smelling, very amazing, and it lasted for about 12 hours. I put it on my arm, and all of a sudden, I had a tan. And it wasn't that creepy tan like you get in the drugstore. It was a beautiful, light, golden tan. And I thought, oh, my Lord, I'm going to wear this in the winter. So I have all kinds of thoughts and dreams about what can be done with curcumin. So just watch for emails in the future. I'll be sharing my discoveries with you, as well as the science behind it, because there's some powerful science that could really, really be beneficial in the coming days. There is no one with it to get. I mean, this is brand new on the market. You can get the capsules, sure. You can get the root. You can cook with it. You can put it in your smoothies. You can do all kinds of things with it, but it pretty much doesn't taste good, which is why it's mostly consumed as a capsule. And this is, I don't know what this would taste like, but I'm not ready to try that yet, because I got to check on the safety for oral consumption. But as for being on the skin, it is amazing. And the fragrance is actually amazing also. Not at all what I expected. Not at all. Okay, well, there's that. I just have to give you breaking news when it's happening, because I don't just make essential oils to put another essential oil out there in the market. You know, my goal from the very beginning was to bring the spirit of heaven to earth. This is why we're part of the anointing tradition of essential oils. And it's a special a branch that isn't cultivated as much today in the world as it was in the past. in the past, long before there was aromatherapy for healing, there were oils made for the temple. And some of them are in the Bible. And they were highly prized and very highly protected. So they would not be used for less than sacred purposes. So that's, if you found that our oils smell different, well, there's two reasons for it. One is the quality of the oil, and the other is the orientation for that oil's creation. So let's get on with it today. And, you know, that's not actually all that diverse to what we want to cover today, because we're talking about pathways to success. And I went through 10 years of multiple pathways to get to the success of Christ-Cent. And every single venture on that road, I can substantiate with this lesson, which we're going to give you today. Now, this is going to be it is chapter 14 in Love Without End. And regardless of what edition you have, just go to chapter 14 and in bold, look for the second principle of success is do the right thing. Now, you might be saying, well, Glenda, you know, there's so many opinions in this world about what the right thing is to do. Where do we even get started? And you're right. There are a lot of opinions in the world about what the right thing is to do. And then over the history of the world, you got to mix in morality and keeping your promises, such as sacred covenants and the law and the betterment of humanity. You know, we've got different categories that you could refer to for what the right thing is to do. But also, throughout time and history, these things are changing. They keep changing. Certainly, morality is about as shifting today as washing the laundry, you know, changing your underwear. It's about that shifting. Daily, you pick up the news and, oh my gosh, you can't do this and you have to do that. Oh my goodness. Well, who changed that rule? So we can't go there. You know, just even within my lifetime, you know, and I'm not exactly ancient history. I'm getting there, but no, I'm not there yet. It was immoral for a woman to wear pants. Now, she could if she was riding a horse. That was excused, but even in my grandmother's day, that was prohibited. She had to ride side saddle. And in addition to that, you know, she couldn't wear lipstick. Max Factor hadn't been born yet. He had not revolutionized the grooming of women by standards created for Hollywood. So everything changed in about 2 years from the time he went to work for Hollywood. And it's never gone back. I mean, it just keeps going for more and more extremes, and we're pretty much ready for day glow lipstick now. So who knows what will come next, but it's probably going to be outrageous. You can't look. Oh, and speaking of clothing, just don't look at the red carpet today unless you want to be shocked. There is a huge competition for how much an actress or a celebrity in the music industry, how much skin that can bear and still not show the vital parts that need to be covered. And I think the vital parts are even being partially revealed now. So I don't think most people are really ready to agree with that. I think they pushed the envelope a little far, and I'm going to get into why, okay, and what to look for about do the right thing. So here, we're going to get back to our quote. I'm reading from Yeshua. Do the right thing, then do it consistently with momentum until you are doing one right thing after another in the process of living. Make doing the right thing the freight train of your life. Now, be clear with this. I'm not referring to judgments of right versus wrong in conformity with a background of structured morality. Morality is subject to constant revision according to changing protocols and beliefs. What you consider moral today might have been thoroughly shunned in the 17th century. Only a few decades ago in your country, it was considered wrong to dance and for women to wear slacks. Today, you understand both as a very enjoyable and expressive liberty. Concepts of morality are constantly in a flux, which is due to the greater truth that morality is change for the better. Change for the better. So, in these recent competitions for body revelation, we have to ask, well, okay, so it's changing. Is it changing for the better? Is anything good going to come from this? Well, I reserve my opinion, but I'm thinking not. There is some rightness in anything that you change for the better. I'm getting back to his quote here. There is some rightness in anything that you change for the better. By just doing the right thing, you are in harmony with life without having to confine yourself to some limiting formula of what others might consider to be proper behavior. The truest guideline for determining a right action is contained within the seven principles of the heart. Unity, love, life, respect, honesty, justice, and kindness. Whenever you practice those seven principles of the heart, you are instinctively doing the right thing in any given situation. So, like I mentioned to you, Nancy, we're going to refer back to a different chapter today. And guess which one it is? The seven principles, the seven intelligences of the heart. You've got to go there because it's the only place we're going to really anchor ourselves in what is the right thing to do. Morality is not going to, well, morality has to be respected, of course, for whatever it is at our current moment in time, but that's not going to be our ultimate anchor of truth. We've got to look deeper for our ultimate anchor of truth. And what the world's conventions are for conformity, well, that's usually some form of enforced structure. We're not going to find the truth there either. So where do we go to find the truth? Well, let's look at these seven intelligences of the heart. That's where you'll find them. All right? All right. Let's just begin about, you've got a question, let's say, at work. And it's a very perplexing question because there is push and pull to agree to this or agree to that, and you're not exactly sure where you stand or what the right thing to do is. All right? First of all, you can ask yourself, what creates unity? Okay? Not who's pressing you or saying, oh, my grandmother would turn over in her grave if we did that. Well, if your grandmother was living today, what would she say creates the greater unity? And that includes the unity of you with your job. It's not your job in every situation to create unity among others. I think we all should contribute to that. Yes. And we contribute to that by doing the right thing in all the other categories as well. We contribute to unity by being the love that we are. But you have to be in you. You have to think, all right, which direction would I be unified with? What's going to bring unity for me? Because you have a right, not just a right, but almost a commandment to be in unity with your life, with what you choose for your life. If you can't be in unity with it, you better think about choosing something else. And that's pretty much the way it goes. But after we go through all of these intelligence of the heart, you'll see how one builds on the other. So the next is love. Well, this is one of the most misunderstood intelligences of the heart. You might think it's the easiest, because doesn't the heart love? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I love chocolate cake. No, you don't. You like chocolate cake, or you don't, whichever way it goes. What is love? All right, it starts with you being who you really are. And I'm not meaning defined by your identity or your role or even your purpose in life. All of the external parts of you could contribute to who you are, your understanding of who you are. But you have to think sometimes when you're really sorting this out, if I let go of all these things I identify with, who would I be? How would I feel? Where would I go? How would I redefine my purpose? How would I get started again? If I lost it all, what talent would I call upon? What orientation to life would I implement? What would I do first? Well, a classic example of that was Neil Donald Walsh, when he lost everything and wound up sleeping on a park bench. And he thought to myself, okay, I've lost it all. What would I do next or first? What would I do first? Now, talk to God. That was his answer. Talk to God. That was the beginning of his new life. You know, so many other authors and creators have gotten in that position. And what they are now famous for is what they did next.
Mm-hmm.
They sloughed off all of those identities. This is one of the stresses going on in our world that I'm very, very concerned about, is identity everything. Because your identities are actually replacing the love that you are. And they're not going to give you the direction. On the deeper side of what it could mean is that everybody's included and we eliminate no one regardless of their identity. Now, there's a positive direction to go in, but just to focus specifically on the identity, such as all people from Oregon. My goodness. That implies you never lived before you were in Oregon, and you'll never live after you're in Oregon. So just imagine, or it could be Montana or Texas or wherever. Just imagine that where you're, that the predicament you're in is in a state, and you could say, well, where would I live if I wasn't in Oklahoma? Think to yourself. And then think that identity you're focusing on is Oklahoma or Missouri or what. I'm just selecting out of a open hat, you know, pulling little tabs out of a hat. And I don't mean anything by these tabs I'm pulling out. They're just an example of a limited identity that you are greater than. And you have to think, we're not thinking greater than these limiting identities today. And it's causing a lot of trouble in our world because we're not getting to the core of our being. So here it is about love. Most of us think of love as an expression. What do we express? What do we feel? We think of it as a feeling, as an expression, or an action. Or, and so much for people, especially in the romantic category or the job-seeking category, attraction. What can I attract? Who can I attract? Who will be my soulmate? What is my perfect job waiting for me to find it? So we think of it as attraction, expression, feeling. Okay, it goes on and on. Something external to ourselves. I'm going to give you now a definition to go on that always works. And it goes back to the fact that God is love. God is the source of love. God created everything from his love, as love, to be love, for love. All right? So, ask yourself, what would it take in any given situation to create love? You're in a conflicting situation. Nobody's getting along. Don't jump in and say, well, I love this and I don't love that. You're just contributing to the conflict. So you ask yourself, how could I create love? Whoa. Oh, baby, now you're touching on power. How can I create love? And this could apply to anything. It could apply to making a cake. You followed the recipe, and it's okay. It kind of tastes good, but what could I do that would create a feeling of love for this? Okay? It could apply to anything, my friends. It definitely applies to me when I'm writing, which is why I have not written on my next book in a few months. I haven't had the energy, because it takes energy to do what I'm going to tell you. Is I'm reading a paragraph, and it's great. It says lovely things. It expresses a lovely ideal, like, just look up. You'll find it. You'll find the answers there. Well, that's a lovely idea. But it's not going to make anybody love it. It's not going to make anybody do it. I have to think, what would it take to create love for this idea? Okay. Well, the answer is there. I went through that with every chapter of Love Without End. And always, I would be asking that question of him. That's why that book is so powerful. That's why every time you go back to it, you'll find something you didn't discover before. It didn't settle for human expressions of love, which are mostly all about liking. Really, they are. They're not about love. God is love. And when you get in the state of mind of creating love. Okay. Okay, let's just get back. Let's get back to your kids or your grandkids. There's one of them that you really, really have difficulty with. Understanding, gaining cooperation from that child, a meaningful experience with that child. And you've tried so much, and you wind up spoiling the child because you give in and you try toys. You try taking them to the park. You try doing something every time they complain, and it's not working. What can you do to create love? Create love. Well, I don't recommend this for going out and imposing this on yourself. But inevitably, at some point, we will be sick, or we will be under the weather, or we will be depressed about something. I would suggest you use that opportunity to let that child love you. Let that child love you. You're not the only one that can love. Love is a mutual thing. And, you know, even if you're just trying to negotiate your way through that difficult relationship, you could ask the child, what would it take for you to love what you're doing? That is worth 1,000 new toys. Ask them what it would take to love. Or you could say, what would it take for you to see how much somebody actually loves you? Have you ever thought about that? Have you ever considered that your teachers are not correcting you to be mean? But they're correcting you because they want to make sure that you graduate the third grade and you stay on pace with your fellow students. You know, you might want to just have that discussion with them about the difference between liking and loving. Love's a whole lot more than liking. In fact, it doesn't even live in the same field as liking. Liking could be so many things. You like ice cream. Okay, what kind do you like? And you get tired of that flavor, so you look for another flavor. And then you finally decide that ice cream doesn't like you. You're lactose intolerant. You didn't know it. Oh my goodness. Okay, well, I hate ice cream now. It's like, oh, what a tangled web we weave when we get into the liking formula. We like this friend, who we call our best friend right now, and then she or he shows up wearing something that is so out of trend. They embarrass you, and then that hurts their feelings, and then liking just completely goes away. So what do? Well, you never really loved them. They never really loved you. So you get a new best friend and you make the same mistake. And you go through school liking people and never loving them. So you graduate, you go out in the world, and nobody even remembers you. You show up to your class reunion and it's like, do I know you? Huh. Well, it's nice to meet you for the first time. Sort of like that. All right. I hope I've made my point here, that love is what you create, and you create it through communication, understanding, caring enough to really be in a state of connection with that person or that thing. Okay, so how does that line up with where we're going? Well, it lines up exactly with where we've come from. Where did we start? Unity. There is no love without connection. There's no love without connection. No. There's got to be connection. Now, it doesn't have to always be physical connection. We're getting on down the line. We're going to look at these intelligences of the heart, and we're going to see that there also can be empathy. There can be compassion. There can be spiritual connection. You know, there could be a composer of great music. You listen to that music, and it changes your day. Well, you have a connection with that music. So, but it does require connection to activate love. And parents who just give their children a nanny and toys and think that's love are making an enormous mistake in their life and in the life of their family. There's no connection there. It takes a connection because unity comes first, then love. And it's not about liking. It's connection. Okay, we're going on now to the next one, which I think is a little bit easier. Life. All right. Well, I think we all take life for granted, very, very much for granted, because life was our invitation ticket to be in this world. And it's the one thing that sustains us through our whole journey in this world. We know that if we're surrounded more by life, whatever it might be for you, it might be swimming, it might be going to the beach, it might be walking through a garden or in a forest or climbing a mountain, whatever life triggers you, you're going to feel better on the other side of it. And so that's a pretty easy one. But here's where it gets a little more challenging, especially if we think about the two principles that preceded it, unity and love. Okay, we're back to this office we're talking about, life. You know, what's happening from all the conflict is people are wilting. People are not wanting to be there. They're not wanting to come to work. We're seeing more sick days happening. We're finding more people down with allergic reactions or not wanting to eat together, so they just bring their food and go out to the car to have lunch. You know, there's just, so what do you do to create life? Well, that's about doing the right thing when life is the issue. Well, for one thing, motivation. What can motivate people? What's going on is unmotivating people. So what can you do to motivate people? One of the things is building coordination. Finding little units within the group that actually get along and setting up subchapters of creation, subgroups that get along. They're gonna talk about what their work task needs to function better. And you don't bring in people that disagree with you. Let the people who get along get along. Let them come up with something that motivates them, that creates harmony. Harmony builds life. Joy. You could think about all the things that would make an office look better. Somebody just might want to bring some flowers one day. Somebody might want to say, you know, I heard, I don't know if everybody will like it and I won't play too much, but I brought my CD. There's one song I just thought everybody would enjoy hearing. And some people are going to like it more than others, but it might do something to the energy in the room. Somebody might want to come up with an idea of, hey, look, let's start our day off with just a little bit of calisthenics and breathing and stretching and body work. Let's get ourselves feeling a little better in the body, and then we're likely to feel better in our heart and mind. Okay? You can create your list of what it takes to build life. This is not as challenging as the other two. But let's get on with our list. Whatever builds life. Can you see that that would be the right thing to do? Whatever builds life. Maybe somebody wrote a poem the night before, and you just think, you know, I just want to share it with a group. Somebody found a quote from a great leader, a great inspiration, and you want to read it for the opening of the day. You might have like an opening ceremony for the day. Somebody brings a poem, somebody brings some music, somebody brings a quote. Somebody brings a new breathing exercise. The list is infinite. So where do we go? The next is respect. All right. One of the things that comes quickly to mind, to me, instantly to mind, is let's form an agreement of no bashing of people. Let's don't bash each other's reality. Let's don't use foul language. Let's don't call each other bad names, bad words. And let's don't gossip. Please. Let's have a little, I'm going to save that for the next one. We can transition into the next one. I was going to say, let's have more transparency. Let's don't keep secrets. Actually, that's a borderline between respect and honesty, because it's really disrespectful to keep secrets in a group of people where everybody belongs. Keeping secrets is actually one of the most ancient forms of exclusion. You're not sharing a reality with people. And then inside those secrets, there's probably gossip, which really is highly disrespectful. So just respect. Look for ways you can respect and encourage respect from others. I hope you're seeing by now that all of the things we're talking about are actually, could actually be the foundation for new morality. And yet, it's not really what we normally think of as morality, because morality is about what you can't do. All of these are about what you need to do, because these actually result in what you want and the progress you want. So let's just speed it up here. Let's go into honesty. Okay. Well, there's nothing that will destroy group cohesion faster than a lie. People will find out. They don't. If they feel there's a lie, they won't stop looking. I guarantee you, they won't stop looking. They're going to be on it. And it might take 10 years, but it'll flash up in your face eventually. So just find a way to be honest right off the bat. And you might be thinking, well, you know, Glenda, not everybody would like what I'm going to be honest about, so how do I do it? Well, think about the powers of the heart we've already discussed. All right, what can you say that would not disrupt the unity? You can think about a common denominator. You know, you could say something like, you know, we all have our differences of opinion, our differences of ideas, but the one thing we want is to get back to work and to make this work into a pleasant place to be and a productive place that makes more money for everybody. And is doesn't drain us so that when we go home, we can't be with our families. Okay? There's a way. And love. Well, just being honest is one of the best ways I know of living, because it connects you. You might even ask a question such as, what do we need to share in order to be more connected? Come on, let's all draw a circle in the middle of the room and each put something in the circle that you really need to share in order to feel more connected with the group. What do you need to say? You don't need to say everything. You don't need to say, well, I'm grumpy because I was diagnosed with arthritis or a heart murmur. That's not something they need to know. What do they need to know? Well, you know, I have been coming into work with a bad attitude for several months because I'm just not feeling well. And my friends and family know why I'm not feeling well, but I just want to apologize because I have not been in my best attitude with you. And I'm going to try to do better. That works. That works. You're a little more transparent about, it's not about you. It's about me. I know that's a cliche, but in this case, it's really the deal. It's the big deal. You know, there are a lot of things that are about you, and people have taken them personally. And you need to get rid of that because you need to say what's on your mind. And you might need to say, you know, Henry, I don't like the fact that you're talking all the time because I have trouble hearing. And I try to sit somewhere else in the room, not because I don't like you, but because I got to be able to hear to do my job. And then all of a sudden, Henry says, well, why didn't you say so? and you're going, well, I didn't really know that I could. Now you've done it. So I'm talking about easy to do things that you cast in the circle, things you just haven't wanted to say because you thought they were being offensive. But what you were doing was even more offensive because you were keeping secrets. You were withholding information that other people needed to have. Okay, we go on to the next intelligence of the heart, which is justice. Justice. Justice needs to be in the open, my friends. It should not be vengeance. Vengeance is a poison that will destroy the soul. It will deafen the heart where the heart cannot listen, because you will be so prejudiced to something or someone, you can't even consider a good idea that comes from that person. And so just relieving your personal needs for justice, you might just say, well, you know, we've really got to take it up with management that there's some things going on here that really should not be going on. And it's hard for us to live with. It really is. You know, someone might be judging you, encroaching upon your rights. You know, that touchy-feely thing that we don't and should not belong in an office. Derogatory comments that should be managed correctly and not held privately with a vengeance. You'll never get past that because you don't want to talk to that person. You don't want to even be around that person, but you don't say anything to management because you don't want to get that person fired. Well, it doesn't have to be extreme. You could just talk to that person and say, look, if you don't stop this, I am going to management. I haven't gone to them yet because I don't want to get you fired, but I'm not going to live for this. There are ways you can deal with justice that doesn't require judgment. You can get past it. And the last one is kindness. Okay. What causes kindness? What causes it? God is kind. You have to push him to the beyond the threshold for him to be anything but kind. But how do we be kind? Well, sure, we could express it, but then sometimes we feel like we're the ones being trod on. We let everybody else go first. We let everybody else have their coffee, and then there's none left for us. We let everybody else eat the donuts, and there's none left for us. It goes on and on and on. The new deals come in, and we let the new guy in work have it because they need a break. Well, how should we be kind? What is the right thing to do in regard to kindness? Well, the first thing is you got to be kind to yourself. You can't be the sitting duck. You can't be the one that takes the hit on everything, because then you're being unkind to yourself. So think about the ways you can be kind that actually help everybody. Well, welcome baskets to new people can help everybody. Being there to give advice to new people can help everybody. When the whole group is working together, everybody's happier. And it really comes to us. It comes down to compassion. Compassion is what causes kindness. And so my advice on the intelligence and the right thing from kindness is just be compassionate. And then see what your compassion instructs you to do. Just feel your compassion, but also hold your own ground. You know, one of the things I've found about compassion is that it takes me closer to God. Whereas just giving in makes me a martyr. You don't accomplish anything by becoming a martyr, my friends. Don't do that. It doesn't benefit anything, and it's not the right thing to do. Becoming a martyr is not the right thing to do. The reason Yeshua had to pray till he perspired blood the night before his arrest is because he was not going to be a martyr. He had to have the revelation from his father that what he was doing was an essential act of compassion. An essential act of compassion. Now, when we get to the point where we know we have to make a sacrifice for someone else, then it's a good thing to do. And it actually empowers you. It empowers you. Being connected to God in a state of compassion is one of the highest states of power you will ever know. It will give you the strength to do what you have to do. But it's not the same thing as just feeling sympathy. And here's one of the big differences between sympathy and compassion. Sympathy is, you remember when it was your first day on the job, and you would like for somebody to have just given me a client, right? Of course you would. Giving me a break, because somebody just give me a break so I can get started. That's sympathy. And it's all external. It's about external benefits, getting external benefits. Compassion comes from the depths of the heart, and compassion generates genuine kindness. And in that genuine kindness, it is doing the right thing. Okay, my friends, we have, I actually used up all of your time for collaboration and sharing in this. I'm sorry about that, but I just felt that we needed to go through these dimensions of the heart because it's probably the single most important lesson in the whole of Love Without End, that he gave us these dimensions of the Sacred Heart, where they come from, and the power behind them. They do transform lives, and they are the power that God gave you. This is how you do the right thing without falling into conventions of morality that you disagree with or don't like or infringe upon your rights as a person. This is what a lot of the fight back is going on in this country right now, is that the rights of many people in different identity groups have been, well, they've been infringed on, and they've been hurt, and they're pushing back. Well, I'm hoping for level ground somewhere in the near future. And that level ground will come from all of us practicing the powers within the heart that will teach us how to do the right thing with everyone, including yourself, because you've got to do the right thing with yourself as well. We could just, I could take, and maybe I will next week, go through all of these, doing the right thing with yourself. Because most of my presentation today was about doing the right thing in a group or with others. We need to go through this whole checklist. Now, doing the right thing with yourself. And believe me, Yeshua had to go through that checklist the night before the big deal, the big sacrifice, because it was an enormous sacrifice. How was this to be built as doing the right thing for himself? Well, A, he was going to accomplish what he came here to do. But he had to get confirmation from his father on that. We'll go down. I'll do this next week, okay? So be here next week, chapter 2 on Do the Right Thing. It's a biggie in the world we're living in today, my friends. A really big one. Mm-hmm. So, you know, once we cover this, then we go on to number 3.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a slide down the hill after this. Okay, well, Nancy, I think let's just open the line now to see what requests we have for a blessing. And by the way, I got everyone's email during my presentation, and I actually said a little instant quiet prayer for you as we went along. Take you into our blessing today. So, Nancy, let's open the line.
Let's do it. That was so beautiful. Thank you, Glenda. I'm going to open Rosa's line. Hi, Rosa. Welcome.
Hey there. Yes, thank you. Hey, Glenda. Hey, Nancy. Glenda, thank you for a most beautiful session. I love the new format. It's immersive, and you bring to life Yeshua's words and ideas and statements, and you just bring the book alive. So thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. That's what I was hoping to do.
Yeah, and you've done it. You've definitely done it and doing it, and it just energizes me and makes me think of the word in a whole different way, and your examples are very real life and concrete and relatable. So thank you.
Great. Yeah. All right. How can we bless you today?
I'd like to bless you around some issues around my heart. I think Yeshua knows that. So just wanted blessings around that.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. All right. Hold that strong in your prayer. All right?
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you. So glad you called. Glenda, I'm going to open Caroline's line. Hi, Caroline.
Yeah,
we can't hear you.
There we go. We're clear now, Carolyn.
Yeah. I tried to do this on the headset. It never seems to work. Oh, well. But that was a great presentation. And so many important things came up in that. And one of the things that I wanted to very much ask blessings for was the situations in Britain right now, where identity politics is going rampant, and we've got some very difficult situations, and it's very, very difficult for women and women to be walking around on their own without fear of being attacked. There's attacks on Jewish people and Christians that are not being reported in the news. It's a very, very biased situation, and there's now going to be even more censorship than ever before in Britain. So it's a very, very difficult situation, very polarized.
Yes, it is.
And very, very difficult for, native-born British people because, their rights are being heavily infringed upon, and that's not being reported. I used to work for the BBC, but the current version of it is a very different animal, and doesn't report a lot of stuff. They didn't report a lot of stuff about the COVID issues, and then it's the same story now with what's going on there too. So need a lot of blessings for both sides, for all identities, and
yes, we
a
do.
Great hope that identity politics becomes less of a determining factor for what's going on there, particularly with the two-tier policing that's happening, a lot of arrests, and some of them have been people who are just trying to get the truth out. So there you go. That's really the one thing that needs a lot of blessings. I want to thank you also, thank the community for the blessings that you gave my honey, Steve. He's recovering upstairs. He's doing pretty well. He still could do with some blessings for a speedy recovery and 100% success of the operation. At the moment, it looks like going pretty well. So. Thank you so much.
Great.
And really,
you're so welcome.
Yeah,
you're so welcome, Caroline. We love you.
Yeah, I think it was very relevant. Yeah, and I think it's very relevant that you're talking about the dangers of too much identity versus being the love that you are. That's really a very, very needed lesson in our world today.
Amen.
Well, identity should be the most personal thing a person has. It should not be a subject for collective manipulation.
Right.
That's just
right.
My opinion.
Okay.
Of course we have a right to embrace our identity, whatever that is, but it should not be subject to social, much less political manipulation. That's where the crime comes in.
Yeah.
Okay, my dear.
Okay.
We love you. Have a good rest of your day.
Okay.
Thank you, Caroline.
Love you too.
Bye. I'm going to open Ken's line. Hi, Ken. Welcome today.
Nancy, it is a true delight to hear your voice, and Glenda as well, along with everybody else on the call. Absolutely outstanding. And I just kind of wanted to second everybody else's kind of endorsement and compliment to you for this magnificent new format. The way that you come in and just kind of like take the lead on just really putting out so many beautiful concepts in a way right off from the start. It like makes me, you know, absolutely respond to the alarm on my phone that says, hey, Glenda's call is coming up. You know, do not be late. So it's,
I love that. Well, yeah, you want to be here, huh?
Oh, totally. Absolutely.
We're glad you're here.
Oh, likewise. So I did want to make just kind of one comment and then ask for a blessing. And then I could have said a lot more stuff, but I know you're limited on time, and so I'll save it for next week. I guess the big thing is that when I look at some of the things in the turmoil of the world, is that none of the turmoil is being caused by the people. It's being expressed by the people from turmoil that's being intentionally generated from other places. And so when I look at it and I say, what's the blessing that we're looking for the world? It's a blessing to allow people to find peace within themselves, and then also to give courage to realize the distortion of what's being presented to us. So it's kind of a both and.
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah.
It is. Well, you know, what I think was the greatest thing about the founding of this country, although there's many things we could embrace as part of that blessing, it was a country created by the people, for the people, of the people. And where are the people in charge today? That's what, that's what disturbs me. You know, and that's why I do the work I do, because Yeshua came here for you. For you and you and you and you. Each one of us. He came here for us. He didn't come to create a new religion. Criticize or condemn the elites of the existing religion, but he didn't take them under his wing either. In fact, he said, I didn't come for you. You're doing fine inside your own little cocoon of what you've created. Keep going. Call me if you need me. That kind of attitude. I came here for the people who need God, who need their lives restored, who need to be free, who need to be healed and happy. That's what I came here for. And that's exactly what he did. And he's still doing it. And I love being part of that. And whatever I can do that helps me be part of that, I'm there. I'm in, guys. Count me in. And beyond this physical life, I'll still be in. So you can find me somewhere doing this work.
Well, and I think the biggest... Go ahead, please.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I think the biggest thing is to remind people of what it means to take charge of themselves and to take charge of their community. Because when you've been living in a world of comfort for a long time, you forget how demanding and how rewarding it is to fully be responsible for yourself. But it's a painful first step. But once you do it, you're like, man, this is amazing.
You got it. And Ken, I feel so blessed that I was born when I was and had the parents I had and the grandparents I had. My grandmother was born in 1886. Get the idea. She and my granddad came to Texas in a wagon, and she was pregnant with her first child. And, you know, I inherited from the realities from people who knew what it meant to create their life and to have the compassion and the understanding to coordinate with other people in creating a community and a church or schools or a hospital. You know, they did what, or roads, you know, a community center. And that was long before we had social services and social security, which frankly, I wouldn't want to do without. I love the fact that we have that, but I cherish the fact that I am connected to life when people took care of themselves and they knew how to do it. That's why I'm going to come back and finish this next week from the perspective of doing the right thing for yourself. I think that's just as important as what we looked at today. You know, I frequently talk about my mother, but here's something I haven't mentioned. So many things remind me between her and Granny Clamp, because she was still connected to the old days. She made lye soap. I mean, really, everything. She did her laundry with lye soap. She cleaned her kitchen with lye soap. They washed the car with lye soap. And not only that, she was so famous for it. She would go around town with boxes of lye soap wrapped up in tissue paper and give them to doctors' offices with the audacity of saying, you should be using lye soap because there's no chemicals in it. It's the only thing that will really clean your office. I mean, she made the newspaper once for her lye soap, and she gave me a wedding present of lye soap. That's one of the comedies of my life.
She truly had a multidimensional backbone.
Truly.
Well, she did. Yeah, she did. But the thing is, can't we all? Really?
Yeah.
What's keeping us from reaching outside the box?
I think more and more people are doing that, Glenda. I really do.
They are.
Yep.
And I'd love to see more of it.
My daughter-in-law is making bone broth, and she makes her own laundry soap, and she makes her own sourdough bread. I mean, you know, this is just sort of the things that inspire her. And it's really cool to see, you know.
That is great. That is so good to hear.
This is the thing that I think we all need to hear and to realize is that, you know, we may not necessarily be your grandmother, but we can all take a little piece of what we do really well and say, this is what I'm going to go do unconditionally and just stand on it. And guess what? Then you start looking around and you find other people doing other little things. And even if they're thinking differently than you, you still realize that whatever they're standing on is really important for them and probably for all of us, because you're finding the commonality of the anchor of why we're all here.
Amen. Amen. Yeah. And respect it. See?
Yeah.
That you're putting respect. That's respect right there.
Exactly. 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 And the other thing I always throw in, it's a word that I just love, is being honorable. And so honorable to me is respect. It is kindness. It is love. It is caring. It is strength. It's compassion. It's all of it. And you look at it, you know, in the days of old, honor was a big thing. And
oh,
I think
you
that
believe it.
It's the word has gotten kind of malformed and twisted and isolated. Mm-hmm. Nobody really gets it. But when you think about that model of King Arthur or whoever you want, or Yeshua or whatever the case may be, you say, here's that character where it's embodied. And then you say, I don't need to recreate anything, because that honor and that love and that truth and that magnificence is all already there. It may be in a dimension that I cannot completely see, but all I need to do is to call it in and get rid of the stuff that blocks it from coming to me. And whether I do that with myself or I do with my family or my friends, my work environment, whatever the case is, that reality already exists. It's just waiting for us to recognize it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Thank you, Ken.
So true.
Thank you, Ken. I'm so glad
you're
here.
Absolutely. With that, I will.
Well, I could just go
say,
on and on talking about this, Ken, but we've got a blessing to do.
Yeah, I know. I know.
And I've got a couple more calls, but I'm with you, Ken. We could. This is a wonderful conversation because there's so much to be said. So thank you for sharing your feelings because it's enlightening all of us. So I'm going to open up. We have another line, Glenda.
Yep.
Thank you, Ken. I'm going to open Jack. You're here. Hi, Jack. Can you hear?
Hi, this is Genia.
Hi, Genia.
Yay, hi, how are you? I just I'm so impressed and moved by your presentation on the seventh dimension of the heart. It was so good and so helpful. So my request is I want you to repeat many more times in the future in a different way so we can learn more and get into our own, get deep into our soul.
That's we're doing this every week now, Genia. Every week we're
right.
doing it. So there will be a presentation from Love Without End. I'll kind of cherry pick them according to what's going on in the world, what's going on in life, the season we're in, the relevance. And we're going to do the whole book before it's all over. So, I'm so glad that you really got something out of it. And
a lot. It was so good. At least quite today, everything you said is all good. But so that's my request.
Okay, we love it. We take it. Thank
so
you,
much.
Genia. Okay, we have our final caller. Hi, Stormy. You're going to bless us on out together today. How can we help you?
Yes. For all of us on this blessing call, I'll share my light with you if you'll share your light with me.
Amen. And we sure will, Stormy. It will be a great pleasure. All right, everyone. Let's close on that beautiful gift from Stormy. And take a deep breath. All right. We're going to, let's see what we do. We're going into the okay, this way we won't hear calls coming in, and we can all be in that silent place of the soul. You are at all times, body, heart, and soul. Your soul is not somewhere else. It's here. It is you. And it is the higher part of you that preceded your birth and shall exceed your life. It's what guides you through your life. And it's what receives the blessing. And then filters these blessings into particular needs of your operational life. The soul, your soul is in a state of all possibilities. And it needs fuel. We're going to give it some fuel today. And from that fuel, it will direct that into what you need in your physical, mental, emotional, or social, or production side of life. So, in honor of the soul, let's begin by just taking a very deep breath and holding it for, a couple of seconds, just. And then exhale through your mouth. Inhale through your nose. Deeply, deeply, as far as you can go. And hold it for a couple of seconds. Now exhale through your mouth and cleanse the debris of any thoughts that were not absolutely wonderful and positive. We're just doing a little bit of housekeeping right now. We breathe in through the nose because it takes your breath into the sinuses as well as through your bronchioles and your lungs. You need fresh breath in both places. And actually one of the primary causes of sinus infection is not enough oxygen getting there. You're breathing too much through your mouth because it goes straight into your lungs. And then you cough. And then your sinus get infected because they don't have enough oxygen. So you get drainage and you think the problem is your sinuses. Well, it's not. It's your breathing. You need to be breathing through your nose. Take that breath into your sinuses. And you may be saying, but Glenda, I don't want to take ragweed into my sinuses. Well, watch what you're breathing. Be in a clean space. Be in fresh air. Be mindful of what you're breathing. Because either way, it's going to affect your whole body. Your breath is the closest thing to your soul. And from there, it will nurture and create rhythm for your heart. I taught you how to do the four square breath, which is the mindful breath of four stages of breathing. You have an exhale and you pause. You have an inhale and then you pause. And then you exhale and pause. Now the reason for this is that you're reestablishing rhythm and balance into your breathing. And your heart loves that. Your heart loves a balanced breath. This is why sometimes in life you get into irregular breathing, or a person does. I'm not saying you do, but someone does. Gets into irregular breathing and they receive a prescription for CPAP treatment because it keeps the breath regular. It's not that you're not breathing at all or not staying alive, but your breathing is irregular and that interferes with the brain waves. So you're not getting enough time in delta or theta or the cycles between alpha, theta, and delta or gamma. That's another brain wave you get into when you're sleeping. It's a very creative brain wave. That's where you get your creative ideas that you come back from after a good nap or a night's sleep. So it's very important to make your breath regular. You know, when people go into surgery and the heart becomes irregular, they put them on a fibrillator that evens the breath out and it evens the beat of the heart out. So it's a good thing to do. And I recommend that you be in the four square breath during the blessing. For now, we're kind of on a short timer, so I'm just going to take enough to get you into movement. You need to be moved. All of life is a moving theater of what's happening, what's coming, and what went away. Everything is moving in life. And in a healthy body, everything is moving and can move. You don't have places that are stopped up or can't move or in pain. When you're healthy, you move. And you may have conditions to your body right now that don't allow you to do every movement that you used to do. But let's do what you can. Okay? Because it will get your lymphatics to moving. It will get your arterial flow moving and your breath moving and all of your senses moving. So let's just extend an arm and move it and stretch it. Okay? And let's extend the other arm. Stretch it as far as you can and move it a little bit. Okay? And that, do the same thing with each leg. First of all, stretch one leg and move your foot up and down like you were on the automobile pedal, pressing gas to the floor and now releasing it, pulling it up. When you pull your foot up, you'll notice the calf of your leg will be stretched. When you point it, well, your thighs will be stretched. So the whole leg is going to be stretched just by moving your foot, pointing and then pulling back and pointing and pulling back. Most people can do this, and it doesn't require you having to do anything calisthenic. If you can, let's stand up. And the only reason for this, well, not the only, but the main reason for it is so that you can move your hips to the right and then to the left, because that's going to flex your spine. Flexing your spine gets the electrical charge in your body moving from your brain to all parts of, through all parts of your nervous system. And that will carry the energy of the blessing. Okay? And let's end off with a deep breath. Take a deep breath in, hold it, and now breathe it out. I will offer my prayer to Yeshua. And then you follow with your prayer. Our Lord of life, our brother, our friend, our teacher, our guide, our supplier, our redeemer, the one who holds us in your heart, in your hands, who is there when we call, who always, always keeps your promises. For you are there, and you never leave us. We are here now to ask for your blessings that we have prayed for, not because you didn't know already, but because you enjoy us establishing our connection because we want it. And we come at this moment to say, Yeshua, we want our connection with you. We reach to embrace our connection with you. We hold you in an embrace that our hearts may touch. And you may transpose some wisdom, some understanding, some love that we need. We ask that you hear our prayer and bless our loved ones and help us to live the best life we can, to do the right thing in all the ways of our life. And to really, really commit our lives to knowing what the right thing is to do. For those who don't know to ask, for those who don't know that you're with them, we ask on their behalf right now to be in their life and seek your presence. To ask for your blessings, your help, your guidance, your understanding, and your teaching, that they may embrace the truth of who they really are, which is far greater than any identity they could ever cultivate. We ask that you care for the children of all the humans. They most love you instinctively. May their instincts be honored and upheld, that they may know they made the right decision to be born. For those who are about to leave, may they be honored and may they be given a vision of all the things they did in their life to serve to serve life, their fellow humans, and God, that they be welcomed over the threshold into heaven and celebrated for their return home. All of this we ask in your blessed and holy name. Amen. Blessing givers, will you join me now to offer the blessing?
Amen. Amen. And amen. Your blessing has been given. Now, just continue receiving. Your receiving will continue for hours and days and weeks, perhaps. And while it's beginning and settling in, I want you to rest. Lay down on a bed, a sofa, a mat on the floor, a pallet in the backyard, on the grass, whatever is right for you. Let your body be horizontal, so no part is superior to another. That way your body is connected to the earth and your face pointed to heaven. Be one with God and receive everything that is being offered to you. I wish you many blessings for this week and look forward to being with you again next week. Bye-bye for now.